Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of thepaleomom.com. I'm the New York Times bestselling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
Hey, Stacey.
Hello, Sarah.
How are you?
I feel like I'm kind of in a time warp.
Did I throw you off by me starting the show? Is that what happened?
Well, first of all, you know I don't like that, but...
I know, I'm supposed to wait for you to say hi, Sarah, first. I know. That's how we always start. I know.
This week is also a little bit off because we are going to be doubling up our podcasts and recording at different times in order for me to prepare to go to Disney next week. Because goodness knows, Matthew McCary would not let us miss a podcast episode.
It's so true. It's like now that we have this unbeaten streak of like, even on weeks where we're crazy busy and it's absolutely ridiculous, at least doing like a 20-minute check-in show. Now that we have this, you know, like over 2 year, almost coming up on 2.5 year, every week streak happening, it's like there's now, it's like someone's going to enact it into law that we cannot miss a week. I think that's what Matt's going for.
It's Matt's law for sure. He thinks he's Rick Grimes. He's like in my face wearing some sort of sheriff uniform telling me that I got to double up on the Paleo View recordings this week. So next week, and I used air quotes, next week will be freaky because it's like a doo-loo-doo-loo-doo-loo.
I think it'll be interesting for us because, you know, we've made choices about, you know, not recording our podcasts super long in advance. You know, for example, if we wanted to have transcripts done, we'd have to record 10 days before our podcast actually air. And we've specifically made the choice to record our podcasts much closer to when they're actually, produced and uploaded to iTunes and available for everybody so that we have the opportunity to be topical. You know, we do this segment called News and Views, and yes, you know, the majority of the time it's really our personal news. But, you know, it's also our, you know, little safety net for when we do want to talk about something that was recently in the news or some, you know, cool new, some cool new thing, whatever it is that we want to talk about. So I think it's going to be weird for us just having that delay between when we record and when everyone else can hear about it. Like when I go, I know that when I go to write my little Facebook post, that's like, hey everyone, listen to this week's The Paleo View podcast because we, and I'm going to be like, I don't remember what we talked about. I'm going to have no clue by the time a week and a half from now comes around. So also when we record our next one, we're going to have no news because we're going to just get it all over with right now, right?
Totally. We're going to have to make up something.
That could be fun.
Listener, was it true or not section. Right. Yeah, so this week is Finn's birthday. Finn is turning 7. Seven is like that age, and for those people who don't have children that are not yet 7, you wouldn't know this, but 7 is the age that they go from being little boys to big boys that are on the cusp of, you know, actually growing up. And I can no longer call Finn a little boy. Like, he can read chapter books, he can tie his shoes, he can swim, he can ride a bike, and now he's 7. So
Yeah, I'm kind of having like a mommy is old thing over here, because it's bad enough that I have one that's turning double digits this year.
Oh, ouch, yeah.
Yeah, but now Finn is 7. And for those people that haven't yet heard me obnoxiously talk about it, we are going to Disney next week. We never plan to go again. We are making
Now,
this.
have you've never taken the kids to Disney before?
No,
This is the
I've
first time?
never been to Disney except once when I was like 9. My grandparents, who lived in Bartow, Florida, they were snowbirds, took me for like 4 hours one day.
Okay. So that is 4 hours more than I have ever spent at Disney.
Right.
And it is like on our to-do list for this year because our girls are 8 and 5 is to do Disney because they think the princesses are real princesses and live at Disney World. So,
I could see that as being something that they would be into. My boys, however, have literally told me they don't care about any of that
well,
because there's
presumably,
no princesses that matter to them.
well,
And
Finn and Cole will presumably enjoy the rides.
yes, so Finn's been eating. Have I told you that Finn has been eating salads on the regular this month in an attempt to grow 1 inch to ride the tall roller coasters?
That is so awesome.
He
I should
doesn't
tell
like,
my.
I know he doesn't like salads, right? So like all of the boys, everybody, every human being has a food that they really love and a food that they really don't like. And Cole really doesn't like beets, and Finn really just doesn't like salad. Like that texture of raw lettuce is not
Either
his
one of
favorite.
my kids like salad. I'm assuming they'll grow into it eventually because they're genetically related to me. But.
So one night we were having dinner, and it was like a couple of days, maybe 2 days after we had measured all the boys and looked up the rides and, kind of realized that Finn was about a half an inch too short for the rides, and that even if we put shoes on him, like he probably wasn't going to be able to make it.
I love that you had that discussion in your family.
Yeah.
Not like, he's too short, so it's not going to be safe for him to take these rides, but like, can we put tall shoes on him so he can go on
Obviously,
these
duh.
rides? That's the best.
So we're sitting at dinner, and for whatever reason, we had brought Chipotle home, and we were eating Chipotle, and Finn had ordered a bowl, but he doesn't get lettuce in it. He gets like the other vegetables and meat and guacamole, but he doesn't get lettuce in it because he doesn't like lettuce. And Cole had gotten a whole like salad bowl because Cole really likes salad. And Cole finished, and there was like a quarter of Cole's salad left. And we're all sitting there talking about, this ride situation. And I had casually said to him, I'm like, kind of in a joking manner, but also not actually. Well, I mean, the best you can do is try to eat the healthiest foods this month and get a lot of sleep and hope that you have a growth spurt. And I look over, and Finn like grabs when Cole says I'm done and gets up from the table. Finn grabs his bowl and starts to eat it, and he looks at me and he goes, "No, I still don't like lettuce. I'm just gonna eat it this month." I was like, "You're gonna eat lettuce this month?" He goes, "Yeah. You said eat the healthiest foods, and so I'm gonna grow this half inch this month. I'm gonna eat salads." So there's been a lot
If
of.
it works,
I
he
he
may.
did go through a growth spurt. I think he's gonna pull it off. I'm gonna be honest with you. And if not, I'm gonna fight the roller coaster attendants and be like, "My kid ate salad for a month. You're gonna let him on." So
I would imagine that you would win.
yeah.
Just saying,
Obviously.
I was a roller coaster attendant faced with you wanting your kid on a ride. I'd be like, sure, lady. Just saying, just throwing that out there. That's pretty awesome. Oh, I can't wait to find out if he actually makes it on the rides. That's gonna be really cool. And if he does though, I wonder how that will change his view of lettuce, right? Because he's gonna credit the
The lettuce,
salads.
yeah, that's
And
true.
so anytime he's like too small for something or there's a bigger kid at school, he's gonna be mowing down the salads, which is gonna be awesome. This might be the thing. This might be the salad turning point.
Let's hope. And you know what? At this point, I don't think that he minds it anymore either, because now that he's been eating it for a month, like
It's kind of gotten used to the
you know what I
texture.
mean? Like it's kind of like, okay, it's not the worst thing in the world. So, It's clearly not his favorite, but it's not a big, like before it used to be a really big
You know, I
deal.
think that's one of the things about growing up is the recognizing that some foods are not your favorite, but they're really important to eat anyway.
Yep.
And as much as I, you know, like I really feel like food should taste good, at the same time, like I think balanced nutrition comes before tasty food.
Well, I know that's why I eat organ meat and broth and salads. Like, I would much rather be eating cookies and ice cream. I'm going to be honest, but those things, they're not the
So
healthiest.
someone asked me, like, you know, if you knew you were going to die tomorrow, like, what would you eat? And I'd be like, dude, pizza, fried chicken, Oreo cookies, gallons of ice cream. I'd eat all the
We
things.
just had this conversation this weekend, so
You too. So we've had the same conversation independently.
we had like a girls' party on Friday night, open gym. I think actually my mom was here, so it must have been Saturday. And Sarah from Primal Bites was visiting. You met her in New York
I love
City.
Sarah, yeah.
And we were all having the what would be your death meal. And I think my mom started it because my mom's anaphylactic to wheat. So it's like the only thing that she can consider ever eating wheat is the last meal before she dies because it will literally kill her if she eats it. And
Oh, I'm
so
sorry.
my mom's like, oh, old fashioned southern macaroni and cheese. And we all just start naming the most gluten-y foods ever, like cinnamon buns and pizza. This is people are listening to this are gonna kill us. But yeah, no, I totally had that
Yeah.
conversation too.
I mean,
Like those
I think
would be
it's
the foods that I would eat, but you
such
know.
a like stereotypical response in the paleo community to be like, I just really love steak and kale now, and that's what I would choose, even
No.
though I could eat anything. And I'm like, you know, I have the conversation with my kids, like, you know, if those foods made me feel good, and if those foods made me healthy, they're so tasty, of course I would want to eat them. And it's a really important conversation to have with my kids because it's part of them finding their way through food choices, right? Is to sort of say, you know, like, yeah, those foods taste good, but to me, they're not worth it. And kind of giving them that perspective and that language that they need to kind of, you know, as they're growing up and they're faced with more opportunity to eat foods that are going to make them feel horrible and they are going to get challenged to make that those choices independently more and more. I think it's really important to have those conversations with them.
Well, we're working it. And I think Katrina did say, from We Are Primal 2, that she would eat steak. And I just don't think I would. I've had a lot of steak. So I'm good. I mean, I like steak now. Steak tastes good. But anyway, the answer to the original question is, I think we were talking about
What were we
what
talking about?
we were just talking about.
Disney?
If nutrients didn't matter, because we were talking about how important nutrients were, which seems to be a recurring theme on this podcast.
So, Stacey, that is an excellent segue into our guest this week. And I'm really excited because we were just talking about how recording our podcasts so soon before they're actually released gives us this opportunity to be really topical. And I think we've got a really topical guest. I'm super, super excited because we have Charlotte Carr on the show, who is a co-author for a really fantastic new book called Bubba Yum Yum. And it is a paleo cookbook that is really focused on, you know, new babies, moms, you know, new moms, babies, toddlers. And it's just a really, I just a beautiful, beautiful book. And I'm really, really excited to have Charlotte on the show. So, Charlotte, welcome.
Thank you, ladies, for having me. I'm really, really honored to be talking with you both.
We're really excited to have more Australian accents on the show.
And nutrient geeks, we can all, you know, share in our joint geekdom for, you know, nutrient dense diets, because I think that's
Absolutely.
definitely an overlapping interest.
Totally.
Totally.
I will say, because I know kind of some of what we're going to talk about, before I was even paleo and knew about nutrient density, I actually
Yep.
gave my pre-paleo kids liver as their first foods because I like read
Amazing.
online, it's a great
Yeah.
texture, it's good nutrients,
That's right.
easy on the tummy. try it as a first food. So all three of my kids have had liver as one of their first foods. So,
and it's really interesting. I got contacted by a beautiful lady the other day through my webpage, and I think she's a grandma now of three, and she showed me, well, she just wrote down about this book that she cooked with, and she's then fed her grandchildren on it, and there's 11 liver recipes in it, in the baby book, 11. So that would have been, you know, in the 50s, 60s that was written.
It wasn't that long ago that liver was – Yeah, it wasn't that long ago that liver was like once a week. Like when I grew up, we had liver once a week. I didn't like it when I was a kid, but it was, you know, on the table once a week. And we ate it because we all needed the nutrition in it. And it seems that as a society, we've moved so far away from organ meat and so into this, you know, organs are gross and disgusting and they're, you know, like, and we get so overwhelmed by this, I think, intimidation. You know, we don't know how to cook them anymore. We don't know how to make them tasty anymore. So I totally geeked out when I saw the organ meat recipes in Bubba Yum Mum.
I was there.
You've got more than a couple and you've got some really, really neat ones. But you know what, Charlotte, before we talk about your book, you have one of the most compelling stories of how you and your family found paleo in the first place. And I would love it if you would share that story.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to you guys about it. So basically, I had my little boy Willow 2 years ago, and I'm a first time mum. So I just didn't know what to expect or what was normal. But I could tell from the absolute get-go something was going on with his digestive system, because his little fists were all curled up really tight and his tummy was always tense. It was never relaxed and smooth. His face would go red and purple. He had chronic and toxic diarrhea for, you know, well over a year. And I used to ask my girlfriends, you know, your baby's doing this. And they were sort of like, oh, yeah, they're a little bit upset. And I thought, a little bit upset. My baby is literally screaming all night long. Every time I fed him, he'd scream. So I'd feed him again to soothe him again. And he'd just scream again. And collectively, you know, between Willow and I, we were getting about an hour 45 sleep per night. And we were just absolutely exhausted. And I actually started having fits myself. I was just I was so exhausted and depleted.
Now, by fits, do you mean actually seizures?
Yeah, seizures. Yeah. So I would get up and I just wouldn't be able to have my balance, and my whole body would shake. And my doctor, who's an amazing biomedical practitioner, has now made me realize that was actually my body going through a huge detoxification as well. And that the brain can't cope with certain things happening, and that's what happens, and your body will just do these sort of seizure things. So I got us to about the 4 month mark, and it got so bad that we had to look at working out a way to try and get me to have a little bit more sleep and to help poor Willow more than anything, just to try and soothe his belly, because I didn't know why, but there was something going on. And I was really ashamed as a mother. Like, I felt such a sense of failure. I got lockjaw in the process. I just think I emotionally just clamped right down, because the relationship between me feeding him and him screaming was just so incessant and toxic, and it just was going awry. And at the same time, Willow actually, his little hand started shaking back and forth, little tremors, and then it would go from tremors to opening and closing of the fists, and then from there it went to little bits of tapping on the head and blinking of the eyes and sort of biting down. He also started to find sort of materials and his touch, sort of the tactile sensory placement of touching things, just far too overwhelming. And he would sit there and sort of touch his tongue with his hand back and forth and make this strange noise. And, you know, he was doing this, and it got to the point where I was waking at the night and I could just see him doing it, tapping himself on the head constantly. I thought, this little boy in between screaming is just, he's so not settled and something's going wrong, and I'd never seen anything like it before. And I was asking my girlfriends if their baby's doing it, and they're sort of looking at me going, no. And I took him, you know, it took me a while to find the right practitioner to help work out what was going on with Willow. But I found this amazing pediatrician, and as soon as she saw what Willow was doing, she closed the door and she said, Willow is stimming and she told me about the autism spectrum. She just told me about sensory processing issues, and she also told me I was immediately to take Willow off any casein and gluten that were in his diet. Now, at that point in time, I didn't really think that he had a lot of it in his diet, but along the way, we had seen certain pediatricians who had different advice, and we had tried him on a rice cereal, and that was horrific for him. He just screamed and screamed and screamed. And we'd also made him a goat's milk formula from scratch to try and see if I could give him one feed a night. And although it wasn't causing him the grief that my milk seemed to be giving him, his stimming had gotten really exacerbated, and it had certainly increased. And that was obviously the point of the case in being in the goat milk formula for Willow's particular anatomy. And so I was at the point where, you know, feeding wasn't working, and now I couldn't give him this sort of, in my mind, it seemed to be quite a good goat milk formula, and I had to go and find a formula or something to feed him that was very gentle and soothing. I knew that I needed something a little very nutrient dense, because I became very mindful when the doctor explained to me that it was to do with the relationship between his gut and his brain and the blood-brain barrier, and that in her mind he would have a very compromised and a dysbiosis of bad gut bacteria in his gut, and that would be causing the toxicity and not certainly not helping the toxicity that was in his brain that was causing the stimming. And so I needed to go in and find a way to settle him down. And I went up to the supermarket and I looked at all the stuff on offer, and that, you know, there was a whole range of products that were appealing to me, because they said, you know, it would help with gas, it would help with colic and reflux, all things that Willow had been diagnosed with. And we tried everything. And at the same time, I'd expressed my milk. I was expressing about a liter a day and treating it with lactase, removing the lactose out of it, and going up to the baby store and trying new bottles, and then going back there the next day and saying, oh, the bottles don't work. And, you know, the women in the store were looking at me like, oh, my God, this woman is batshit crazy. It's like, there's nothing wrong with the bottles, sweetheart. And I just was so tired and not just – I was just – you know I had a lot of anxiety myself. I felt so – I was so disempowered and I was so disheartened at this experience of, it's supposed to be the most beautiful, and it was the most beautiful time of our lives, but it certainly was a very scary time in my life to see my little boy stimming like that. And so I looked at these formulas in the tins, and I had to find something for me that was gluten-free, casein-free, and I also found out that Will's had MTHFR gene mutation, so he wasn't able to have any folic acid either. And I couldn't find one product on the market that catered for his particular needs that wasn't predominant in corn syrup, vegetable oils, and sugars. There's just nothing. There was nothing on the market that didn't have those three ingredients as the main carrier to feed my baby. And I just sort of sat there, and I came home, and I had all these tins. Like, I think I bought six, and I just cried because I thought, my little boy is sitting here with his hand up. He's basically holding a flag up to me saying, something's up, Mum. I'm not coping with things very well at the moment. Can't handle your beautiful, you know, most, in my eyes, breast milk is the best milk, and there is nothing better nor more appropriate for your child. But I certainly couldn't make the jump personally from that breast milk to a formula that was going to be specific for my little boy's needs that was filled with corn syrup. I was just floored by it. You know, it was this defining moment in my life going, how can I do this? Like, this isn't what I'm going to do. And I think it was around about the same week, and I was in my local health food store, and a beautiful naturopath said to me, you know, how's it all going? And I just burst into tears, and I wanted to say it was just so beautiful and everything was amazing, but I was terrified. And I said, I'm not doing very well. I'm not coping very well. I don't know what to feed my little boy. I'm in a really bad way, and physically he's in a really bad way. He's doing this thing called stimming. And she just smiled at me and said, darling, I know that there's something out there and we can find it. And she made an appointment for me really quickly. And she sat me down and she showed me the beautiful formula that was developed by Mary Enig, an American biochemist with a PhD in nutritional science, who had developed this formula called meat liver formula. And my first instinct was, I can't do that. I can't make it every day. You know, I'm too tired. But then I thought, well, hang on. These are my options. And this is my little boy that I'm talking about here. And you never compromise. And I made it. And it was like, it was just the difference in my little boy within his first feed was absolutely remarkable. You know, his little tummy went softened. He smiled, he relaxed, his shoulders went down from, you know, being up near his ears in this screaming pain to just, he just sort of looked at me like, oh God, why have you been keeping this from me for so long? And we actually appropriated the formula a little bit so that it had a bit more calcium, a little bit more vitamin C from an Australian sourced Gubunji plant, which is the highest plant source of vitamin C on the planet. And we added that in as well. And, you know, it was just the beginning of this massive journey about understanding what you're putting into your bodies and how the relationship between the gut bacteria and the brain works as well. And we did a bio screen, which we ordered through a doctor, and the bio screen goes in and looks at everything that's going on in the gut. And we saw that Willow had not one strain of lactobacillus in his gut, even though I'd been giving him probiotics since birth, and he'd had my breast milk, and he'd had probiotics. Nothing was sticking or holding because the housing of his gut just wasn't right at all for him to hold on to it. And which obviously meant that he had the leaky gut and everything like that. And he also had Dynoamoeba species, which for some reason loads of children on the spectrum have it. And he had toxic levels of strep. So we were able to have a really good look at absolutely specifically what was going on with his gut and then work out what are the most nutrient foods on this planet, how can we get them into our children, and we need to go in and seal and heal this gut. And then it was just like it was on for young and old. I started brothing. I'm making the best broth I've ever seen. It's, you're holding it upside down, it doesn't move, it's so thick and gelatinous. And I've watched this little boy go from this incredibly toxic state to right now. I can't remember the last time I saw Willow stim. So the healing that's occurred has been remarkable. And he's also doing, you talk about poo a lot as a mum and poo and sleep, but he's doing fully formed poos as well. And it's just, we've come a long way in a short amount of time, considering the level of toxicity that was sort of taken hold of him.
And so through that process, I assume that you also ended up pretty dramatically changing your own diet.
Yeah, we changed everything. So before pregnancy, I had done quite a bit of cleaning up in my mind. I thought I had, you know, we'd started to go down the whole, let's get rid of the grains, let's, you know, go quite primal in our approach. But in actual fact, all the stuff that was going on, you know, the strep, and I had mercury in my body, and all this stuff that was going on hadn't been addressed, and it wasn't probably a clean enough environment for it to have the best outcome. So we have made dramatic changes to our diet now. You know, we're fully paleo. We really focus on casein-free and gluten-free cooking. We buy organic vegetables. We cook seasonally, and we always have broths and fermented foods, really big on the fermented foods, and working out, you know, how these little babies just love them. They just love the sour notes of the ferments, and Willow asks for them with every meal now, and we cook all these food in broth. And I tell you what, it could have really rocked me, you know, knocked me around these last 2 years, but I've got more energy than ever, and I feel better than I ever have as well. So it's been like a real domino effect for my family. We are all feeling fantastic and thriving, and I just love this way of eating and lifestyle so much, because I've just seen how much inflammation can affect your body, and by attacking that inflammation and lowering it, and having, you know, the low inflammation foods and the really healing broths, just how much healing can occur it's blown my mind, you know.
I think both Stacey and I have had, you know, our own journeys to this, but both coming to this place of a very nutrient density focused paleo diet as being therapeutic in our lives and very empowering.
Really is.
So you co-wrote Bubba Yum Yum with Helen Patterin and Pete Evans. And I would love to know like how this project, you know, like how this project came to be and how this collaboration came about, because that's a pretty really neat group of people.
Yeah, they're like, you know what, I just love these guys so much and what we've been through the last few weeks and the grace, and they're just the most beautiful people. We're just holding each other through this because we know what we've got is this amazing, beautiful product. And Pete Evans met my husband, who's a beautiful musician. He was playing at an event that Pete was talking at one night. And Wes had talked at that event about how I'd started this food blog for my little boy and we were doing casein and gluten-free cooking, and Pete was interested and he started following my Instagram account, and we started sort of online having a social relationship, and I'd follow him, he followed me. We totally dig Pete's, the way he stands up and is so strong and proud about what he believes, and he knows that he's right. And he just texted me out of the blue, emailed me actually, "Would you like to co-author a book with me?" And I was like, oh my God, how am I going to do that? I don't even know how to write a recipe. But I just wrote back really quickly. I wrote yes, because I thought my instinct is just going to shut this down, you know, say I'm too busy, I'm a mom, I'm working, da da da. And I just had this overwhelming sense, you know, similar to the feeling I got in my body when I knew I had to feed Willow a different way. It was a really similar surge. And I just went, okay, yep, we're doing this. And then he said, you know, I've got this amazing friend, a colleague who's a naturopath and a herbalist and a nutritionist. Her name's Helen Patterin. And I'd seen Helen's page and I was just so in awe of her and the work that she was doing with children and the community and her attack of, you know, food is medicine and just her approach on it. Sorry. And she's just the most amazing. She's like a soul sister to me now. We've become so close. And so we started collaborating and writing down ideas and recipes and how we wanted the layout of the book to look and, you know, what we needed to tell mothers who were falling pregnant or wanted to fall pregnant, get their bodies ready, and what they could do with their running their blood tests to see if there was anything genetically going on that might be an indicator that there might be a few little things that will come up for them along the way. And of course, having Helen on board for all that information was just amazing, because she'd just write it all down and we'd go through it together. And then Pete had the amazing recipes and his idea of what foods needed to be in there. And we all worked off this Dropbox that got very messy, and it was just amazing. And then seeing it come to life, and Pete's team shot it, incredible art department and beautiful photographers. And we knew that we wanted this book to have the heart that we all had, you know. It just needed to come off the page and be so colorful and beautiful and vibrant and playful and tactile, because food's got to be this from the get-go. We've got to make food this really interesting, fun experience, rather than sort of like, you must do this and you cannot leave the table until you've had this, but approach it in a different way, that we know there's so much, that it's so nutrient dense, that and it's so colorful, that they're going to want to play with it and they're going to want to explore the textures and they're going to, you know, they're going to want to eat it. It's been an amazing collaboration, and we've just finished a tour around the country together as well. Yeah, it's been amazing.
I mean, when you think about a paleo cookbook that is really focused on, you know, young babies and you know, first foods and toddlers,
yeah,
you know, you think about a lot of mushy baby food, and the fact that you were able to make that so stunningly beautiful and inspirational and colorful, and it makes, you know, me as an adult want to dive right into those bowls of mush. And it just has that, it just has that feel to it that, I don't know, it's inspirational. And it just, you look at that food and you just know that it's nourishing, you know, amazing food. And there's, you just, I mean, I just see this book as being a cookbook that is really going to empower new parents into, you know, really figuring out how to adapt a paleo diet for their babies, and especially in this very nutrient density focused way. I love the amount of organ meat in this book.
Yeah, yeah. There's some beautiful, the use of marrow, you know, and, you know, talking to Helen about what's inside a baby's tummy when they're born, you know, what enzymes have they got? What can they break down? You think about, okay, well, they can break down the beautiful fatty breast milk, and they've got an abundance of lipase enzymes, and that's the enzyme that's needed to break down marrow as well. So that makes a perfect first food for babies. And, you know, historically it shows that's the livers and the marrows and the brains and those sort of things were the things that tribes have been feeding their pregnant mothers and the babies since the beginning of time, because they know it is where the most nutrients are. And making that stuff look good, you know, we've got a great team that did that. And putting them with delicious foods like the cauliflowers and cooking it in a beautiful broth, it just gives it this gorgeous, delicious kind of caramel syrupy taste. And it's just, it's really yum. And we're really mindful in that you don't want to spend the whole time in the kitchen. You know, I've got this saying, less time in the kitchen, more time for cuddles. So we wanted to get mums cooking in sort of bulk and making a lot more so that they can freeze some. And then perhaps they could, you know, we say it takes a village to raise a child, and you could say to another mum, you know, look, this week you do the meaty muffins and I'll do the, you know, the dinosaur sauce, and I'll make up the bolognese or whatever it might be, and we'll swap. And then all of a sudden we've got double the amount and twice as many flavors as we may have had if we were just doing it on our own. So, and we've got little tricks in there too, how to turn baby food into adult food, like a gorgeous sort of pumpkin and sweet potato puree. You can add a nice tin of organic coconut cream and some coriander and turmeric, and you've got a family soup for the rest of the family. So we've got lots of little tips and tricks throughout the book to make it a really beautiful cookbook that can sort of stretch out to the other family members as well.
Yeah, I think that the other thing that, I mean, as our listeners know, that Stacey and I are big fans of organ meat, and no one listening to this podcast is going to be at all surprised that when I saw the recipe in here for brain food puree that's actually made with lamb brains, that I started to like jump up and down because I was so excited to see that. But there's lots of, you know, for an American audience, you know, it's not so easy for us to find brain here, for example. Right. Liver and marrow is a little bit easier, but there's also lots of recipes that to me are very much the way I cooked, especially for my second daughter. I still wasn't paleo, but I had learned a lot through the trials that we had with my oldest daughter and her. Yeah. Colic and she was also sensory processing and had really a hard time with solid foods. And so, you know, I started my second daughter with avocado, not liver, but, you know, it was a very different, right? It wasn't the rice cereal. We exactly. did things very differently. And yeah. a lot of these recipes are very sort of reminiscent of the things that I cooked for her. You know, I used to make a mash of banana and avocado, and that was her favorite food. And so I would make that Perfect. Most days, and you have a recipe that's, you know, extremely similar in this book. And so I look at this and I, you know, from my, even though my experience with my girls wasn't paleo, there's so much in here that's so reminiscent of the nutrient focus that I was doing the best job that I could at the time. And then it's like ramped up with all of these great you know, superfoods. Like it's a book of making superfoods into, you know, a baby appropriate, you know, presentation. And I just love it.
It's so nice to hear that, because we haven't been able to get it out to a lot of people. It's just getting that feedback. You've got no idea. Like it's really, I'm so chuffed.
I love the word chuffed, by the way. That's one of my favorite words.
I think
what is that
Americans
word?
Don't use it very much, but
yeah, but we know what it means. We just don't use it.
I use it all the time.
I think what's really interesting about what I'm hearing in this book is that although it's paleo, it's also a book that not just paleo people have been looking for. Like this is a book that would have been super helpful for me even before I was paleo, because I was looking to do that for the not the exact same reasons as you, but for very similar reasons insofar as, you know, I had gone to such great lengths as a working mother to pump my milk and to feed my babies my own milk. And, you know, I myself had given up dairy and given up chocolate for both the first two boys because was lactose intolerant and therefore is passing it through my breast milk. And they had severe colic and green and bloody stools and, you know, all kinds of bad stuff when I was giving them my milk because what I was eating wasn't the right things for them to be processing. And so, you know, I had gone to all of this trouble to give up milk and, you know, to have all this beautiful, as you said, breast milk for them. It is what nature intended for them to eat, right? No ifs, ands, or buts about what anybody's opinion of breast milk is. Clearly, that is what nature intended for them to eat. So to go through all that trouble and then, you know, to face the idea of transitioning them onto real solid food. And I remember going to the store, like you said, and kind of facing choices. And for me, it wasn't formula, but it was first foods, right? And so all of my friends are like, oh, the baby puffs this and the rice cereal that. And, you know, I'm looking at the boxes and the cans and the, you know, plastic containers and looking at everything and reading the labels. And there at that time, there like wasn't even organic clean baby food, right? Like now there's a few options, a few brands that I think people can find clean ingredients. But at that time, there was nothing but like, you know, rice cereal and stuff with corn syrup and sugars and fillers and every single food had like eight ingredients. Yeah. And I remember saying to myself, well, everything that I've read online says you should only introduce one food at a time. Yet all of this food here has so many different ingredients, and I don't even know what some of these ingredients are. I don't want to feed it to my kids. And so I remember going home. I wasn't paleo at the time. I was crunchy granola because I was breastfeeding and cloth diapering and doing all that kind of stuff. But I remember going online and just Googling everything, like what's the most nutrient-dense food I can feed my kids? What's the most appropriate food to, you know, first foods? And I got a, you know, list from a website of recommended foods to give babies based on like a 12-month schedule, you know, making sure that there were certain foods that you didn't give babies before 12 months and slowly started introducing them one at a time. And that's how I learned about liver. That's how I learned about avocados as being a good food. We actually did lima beans as well, which we don't do anymore. But, you know, for me, that was a much better nutrient option than rice cereal, which I remember, you know, all of my friends kind of giving their babies rice cereal and the kids just, they weren't even ready for it yet. You know, it was like at 4 months and they just were spitting back out the food and they were shoving it back in. And, you know, the baby's clearly saying, I don't want to eat this. Like the parents are shoving it in.
Children are so smart, aren't they? They're so clear to tell us what's going on, what they want and what they don't want. Yeah. It's like, you know, we've got to give them some credit for what they try and tell us. Willow, he was not a happy camper when I started him on the rice. But it was, you know, I support and love any mother through any choice they make. But and for me, that was what a really great pediatrician in my country had told me, and I went down that path. But then I realized really quickly that this isn't right. You know, just looking at the ingredients and not knowing where it's from, and then going, you just sort of sit there and go, hang on, shouldn't these are little tiny babies? This is their first opportunity, and it's a lot for them to take on. And breast milk's it's the most perfect thing for them. And then, you know, like you did, you look into the research of what do their brains need? Okay, they need fats. Where am I going to get the fats from? You look at the things like the avocado and the marrow and gorgeous coconut meats and all those beautiful things. And that you watch the kids, they love it. They absolutely love it. They're like, your mama's got the right idea now because it's tasty, you know. There's some density to it. There's some flavor, and it's nice and tactile. So, yeah, they're great things to put into the baby's diet, and you feel great as a mum too because you just go – and it's really easy to make, you know. Like I'm a working mum like you girls as well, and you just got to be mindful that it can't take a long time to make these things, but when you're making it, we were really mindful to make sure we could add in little bits of this and little bits of that just to boost it, to make it kind of that super nutrition. So, yeah, it's very much been a labour of love, and we're certainly proud of it, and we cannot wait for it to get out because we really know that this book's going to change a lot of people's lives. And whether the child has anything that's presenting or they don't, you know, it's all about nutrition, and it's all about making food fun and you know, appealing to their curious little minds about what food is, and making sure their journey on food is a beautiful one filled with joy. So it's just I'm so chuffed that you girls have had the book and had a look at it. It's I'm getting a real thrill out of it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Stacey.
That's okay. I was just gonna kind of recap and add on to that I think that's what's kind of magical about the book to me, is that it's taken all of that legwork that I had to do 10 years ago in coming up with all of that information myself and looking into it and feeling overwhelmed, and put it into, you know, one kind of easy digestible, aesthetically pleasing resource for people to find out that information, and from soup to nuts, right? I don't know if that's a saying that you guys have, but from everything, from the beginning of...
Yeah. I still don't get that phrase. What, I really have to say.
What it is to why it is, and then how to do it, you know? And I think that's what's really important, is kind of that thread for people, because most of us who are actively thinking about these things don't just want to have somebody tell us do this and then we blindly do it. We want to understand why, so that we can be assured that we're making the right decision. So I think, you know, that's great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Okay. Now there's like so many other things that I want to make sure that we talk about. One of the things that I really love about this book, and it makes so much sense in a baby-centered book, but at the same time, like when I started flipping through it, I was like, colic tea, like, yes, that's really cool. And like cough syrup and, you know, cradle cap lotion, and these very, you know, sort of rooted in sort of pre-modern medicine, right? The old-fashioned remedies that we used to use, right? Like using onion and, you know, these herbal teas. And I think it's really lovely that you've sort of brought in these traditional elements as well. I mean, I think that when we talk about nutrient-dense diets, in many ways those are inspired by traditional foods. And I really love that there's sort of these, also these sort of like home remedies sort of included as well.
It's my one of my favorite parts of the whole book. I think it's so special because it really sets it apart from just a normal little book. And Helen's just done that. She's just amazing with all that sort of stuff, because she's been in clinic now for 14 years and she's treated that many children with all have the same symptoms and all presenting with these things, and she knows that they work. They're tested, and that's her little bit of the book that is just filled with so much love. And even the tummy bug tea, you know, it's so clever. And sore throat squashies for when the children have sore throats and they don't want to swallow anything, and they're more inclined to have a little jelly or something that looks like fun. And yeah, it's beautiful.
And you also have a lot of information about the nutrients that babies need, or that pregnant moms need at different phases, and what foods contain those and what foods are appropriate at different ages. And I think that's a resource that a lot of new parents, whether they're, you know, paleo diet or whole foods diet or just, you know, nutrient centered, that's information that people are really hungry for. And it's really beautifully organized and laid out in this book. It's just really easy to kind of grab the information you're looking for as you flip through. And I think that's wonderful.
That's such a good thing to say, because we were really mindful of that. I was like, you know, as mums, you're just so tired and you just don't want to be going from this page to this page to this page to this page. You want it all in one section. We want it all together in the right areas. I love that. And, you know, I'm going to be pumped for my next pregnancy as well, because I'll be like, I've got the book. I know exactly what to do. So, yeah, it's...
You've made so many changes in your own diet too. It's quite possible that, you know, your breast milk will be that perfect food for the next baby.
Absolutely. And you know what was really interesting about that is I actually fed another baby. I donated my milk for them, and they were absolutely fine on it. It was really actually probably part of my recovery, because, you know, I will – it's quite heartbreaking not breastfeeding when you've got, I had a great amount, you know, my supply was awesome, and working expressing was going really well. It was an easy thing to do, but it was just unbelievable the effect it had on my son versus the effect it had on this other little boy. And he thrived. He absolutely thrived. And I was able to give him enough to, I think, get him through a lot, which was just, you know, which was awesome. Yeah, a side note, but yeah, that would be just very dreamy for me to do all that work on my body and get that pre-pregnancy everything, you know, look, addressing those sort of certain flags that were held up for Willow with the MTHFR and, you know, things that were going on with his gut, and doing all that dense gut work and addressing some of the things that will be are in my gut as well, so that we have a much easier ride next time. And I know even if it's a little bit better, then that's a big step for me as well, you know, just every year you just get better and better by eating this way. I thought I felt really good at the beginning of last year, but now I feel, you know, now I'm looking at this year and I feel better now. So it's like every year just cleaning up and just feeling more alive. And it's certainly a wonderful, it's wonderful choices to make by, you know, having such good produce and feeding your family with every mouthful, just with nutrient dense food. It just makes you feel so, I don't know, empowered or something.
But I think that experience is, as much as it was hard for you to go through, and as much as your whole family has come to this, you know, very different place because of what you went through with Willow. But I think that not only is that experience, I mean, I just love your sense of optimism looking forward, but you know, you've created this amazing resource for parents out of, you know, something that was so hard on your body. You were having seizures. And I just think that strength that you have and that you've brought to this project is just, it's inspiring. And I'm really looking forward to when people can actually get the book. Do you want to talk about how that's going to work?
Absolutely. So at this stage, it's going to be in April. We're looking at a release date tentatively on the 14th, just pending we get it up on the iTunes and it downloads and does all that stuff. I'm really bad with the technical side of things, so I leave it to the boys to do that and upload it. So yeah, definitely in April, and then we're in the middle of getting all the quotes done for the physical release of it as well, and we'll have all those links all on our website. So it'll be on Pete Evans, Helen Patterns at Nourish Ed, and mine, which is thebubbayumyum.com, and you'll be able to get physical copies of the book as well as the ebook, which will be, the ebook will obviously be out first with the physical book to follow in the coming months.
And we'll make sure that if you've got any of those links ready for us by the time this podcast airs, that we put that in the show notes for people as well, so that they can get that information. And
fantastic.
Yeah. So I guess my last question is the like question that every author dislikes being asked when they are on the cusp of releasing a book, but what is the next project? I know it's like the worst question ever. When I get asked that question, I'm like, I'm just doing this project. Don't ask me the next.
I know. Look, my heart of hearts is First Foods for Children, and I've learned so, so much. So I think what I'll do is focus on a bigger book for the First Foods. So in this book we've got, I don't know how many recipes we've got in this sort of 6 to 12 month section, but I am going to really focus on that age bracket and put together a beautiful array of, you know, gorgeous the casein-free and gluten-free cooking, which of course appeals to the entire paleo community and also the whole food mamas, and really looking at getting this nutrient-dense food into the little bubbas at their first mouthful. And I'm going to be learning about – I'm actually going to do a course with my girlfriend about essential oils, and I'm really looking forward to putting, some massage techniques and things like that in the book as well for newborns.
That's
fine. So, yeah, and understanding oils and how to use them in foods and with foods and through massage and bath time and playtime and all those sort of things. I just really, you know, I adore our little ones and children. So yeah, just more cooking. And once the book comes out, I'm going to have a little holiday with my little man and go somewhere in the bush and just hang out for a bit, because we've been pretty busy on this big paleo tour, which has just been phenomenal. And Pete's just done this great tour around Australia, and we've gone to – he's just gone everywhere. He's such a generous man. He's gone and to regional towns that wouldn't normally get someone like Pete going to their towns to cook, and he's teaching them the basics of how to stock their pantries and, you know, from A to Z, everything paleo and why it's good and why we need to get the inflammation down and why it works on people's bodies. And so that's just been the most unique experience, to be part of that speaking team. And I'll be doing some Bubba Yum Yum events as well, so teaching mums and holding their hands and being really compassionate with getting them prepped for feeling like they can choose their first foods confidently and how to do them and how to do shortcuts and doing the hour of power in the kitchen, prepping them up for the whole week. So, yeah, I look forward to doing some workshops later in the year as well. And maybe, you know, it would be nice to maybe have another baby at some stage.
Yeah, I would recommend not doing all those other things at the same time as a baby.
That's right.
I second that.
Yeah, that's right. You would all know. So, let's look at that at the next 2 year plan and a priority. So, like you both, just trying to manage it all and keep it all fun and remember the heart behind the project, and really reach out to those mums out there looking for make really beautiful choices with first food to their children. And I'm a happy camper if we can get this into the hands of one mum that's going, hey, what should I do here? Because there is a lot of differing opinions, and, you know, maybe I'll be able to get this information in the hands of a mum who's going through something similar to me, and they can go confidently into feeding their little bubba, and you know, then that's all of our jobs done really well.
Well, Charlotte, I just want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your story and this project. And can you tell our listeners where they can find you if they want to follow you and know more about you? Where they can stalk you is really what we're asking. Yeah. Give them the stalker information.
Yeah, come and stalk me at bubbayumyum.com. I'm on Facebook as well, and I'm on Instagram on at bubbayumyum.
Well, thank you so much. Stacey, any last thoughts?
No, again, just thank you for joining us, and congratulations on your new project. And we hope that any of the media attention that you may have received can turn to positive and maybe is reaching people who might otherwise have not heard of or known about some of the successes that you've had. And I want to thank you also for mentioning that you have worked with a doctor on a lot of this stuff, because I think it's important that people recognize that, I'll speak for Sarah and myself, that we do a lot of acknowledgement of both science and research and working within in actual facts and scientific basis for a lot of the things that, you know are happening, and then we search back for the reasons why. So it's been great to hear you talk a lot about that today, and I hope that it's helped people kind of understand better where you all are coming from, and just wish you all the best.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful. I'm really chuffed.
Thank you very much, Charlotte, and thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
It's only taken 2 years for me to figure out how to switch microphones without calling the IT help desk. Hold on, Sarah, 1 second.
Yeah.
What? Yes, I changed Skype to the headset. How else would I be talking to her? Aren't you impressed with me?
Very impressed. Oh, that's going to be really, really great in the bloopers. Oh, thank you, honey. We haven't actually technically started yet. therefore.
Therefore, so, I can call you honey.
Therefore, yeah. I mean, I could call you honey, too.
That's all right. I got plenty of people calling me honey already.
Do you really?
I don't know. One's more than enough.
Yeah. I like it when people call me honey or dear. I get deared a lot. And I get kiddoed a lot. I feel a little bit old for being that, for being kiddoed.
Yeah, I don't think I want to be kiddoed.
I get kiddoed a lot. Rob Wolf kiddos me. And I think he's like 2 years older than me.
I think he's older than 2 years older than you, but yes.
I don't, maybe he's 5 years older than me, but he's not kiddo older than me.
Fair enough.
And yet, from Rob Wolf, I mean, hey, sure, whatever he wants to call me. Oh, I just want to say I love Australian accents.
I was going
to
say, I forgot we were going to get an accent. Hi, Charlotte. This is Stacey.
Hi, Stacey. How are you?
Good, thanks. I heard that you guys think that our accents are cool, which I think that's ridiculous. I think Americans have terrible accents.
I love your accent.
Stacey, I don't like your accent. Just so you know, so we're clear.
You're not Australian.
I'm Canadian. And therefore, you have an accent.
Yeah, but Canadians don't like American accents.
I see what you're saying.
Australians like American accents.
So wait, Charlotte, does that mean that when Americans go and, you know, the quintessential, like, live in Australia for a year or whatever they do, that, like, they get all the girls because they have these, like, exotic American accents?
Pretty cute. Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That just blew my mind right there.
We love them.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that really just blew my mind. And now
get it together, Sarah. Get it together.
I understand now why my brother-in-law went and spent a year in Australia.
We're suckers.
So